cannon shoots, scores!
Et derrière à Chauvin,
un tir et le but! Piqué Chauvin!
Come on, Chapman! They score! An overtime winning goal for Alex Galchenyuk!
Pacioretty gets the hat-trick goal!
Exclamation mark on it. Puck is set down the ice, and that's going to do it. Canada's only playoff hockey team advances to the Eastern Conference Final.
Welcome to the 2-4. As per usual, Zach Vanoss, that's me, Sean O'Neill. Glad you're listening. Things are looking up in Habsland right now. How are you, Sean?
I'm good. It's been kind of a crazy week here in Ottawa, but obviously everything's fine, back to normal. And yeah, anytime the Canadians do something that hasn't been done for 50 or 60 years, it's usually pretty impressive. And that's strangely where we are at the beginning of the season.
Since we last cast, I don't remember what game we last cast after, but let's just say the Habs have improved to 7-1 with some decisive victories, including one over the Bruins. And then coming up, and a big win, bit of a revenge win against the New York Rangers, and a win over the Patequa and the Colorado Avalanche thrown in there as well. As I say, 7-1, we're going to have trouble finding too many things to complain about, but I'm sure we'll find something.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of the nature of being a Habs fan.
How is the, in all seriousness, how is things in Ottawa? Back to things, getting back to normal?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't work, I don't work or live right in the epicenter where everything happened, but yeah, pretty much back to normal. It's still a little weird when you walk by the War Monument, when you walk by Parliament Hill and stuff, it kind of hits you, but I think by and large, everyone's rebounding pretty nicely.
Yeah, I thought the NHL did a pretty good job, too, on their part of...
I was really impressed. Not only by what, the Canadian markets did. I did think that the Montreal, Ottawa, Toronto thing on Saturday night was pretty impressive. But even some of the U.S. markets showing the love the day after and, Friday, that type of thing. I know Pittsburgh did something. I think Boston did as well. That was pretty cool, too.
And I liked that it was, honoring and respectful and not over the top, which, there's always a bit of danger of really going too far with it sometimes. But no, I thought they got the tone of it right, and pretty impressed with what they delivered.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought it was handled really well.
Shall we jump into the 12-pack here?
Might as well.
Question number one.
Later night, because we're on a West Coast swing. So
yeah, exactly. Let's get this thing out there. Question one, the better play. Was it PK's break from the sin bin to score on Colorado, or Plex and Patch's 2-on-none on the penalty kill against the Rangers?
Easily the two highlights of the season so far, right?
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Two pretty memorable plays. I'm going to go with Subban. I think they were both great jump-out-of-your-couch plays, but I think the Subban play maybe showed off his skill a little more, is more a little bit the result of, an individual effort where, almost by definition, if you're scoring on a 2-on-0 while shorthanded, something went horribly wrong on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
So just for that, just because I think there was a little more sort of skill involved in what Subban did, to me that's the highlight of the season thus far, 8 games in.
Yeah, I guess I have to agree with that. Although there was something about the... there was really something about the 2-on-none that I thought was a nice exclamation point, especially against the New York Rangers of a Habs team, really. Obviously, as you say, something had to go wrong on the Rangers' end, but that was nice, and it's something that we've seen kind of start to happen with that penalty kill with those guys out there, is yep. Plex and Pacioretty can break it away. Now, it's rare, if ever, a 2-on-none's going to happen again, but I think that was that was the exclamation point on everything that penalty kill unit's doing right now. And I think they're going to be dangerous all season.
Yeah, and you mentioned this on the website today, but there was a point in time where you would not have seen Max Pacioretty out there in a penalty killing situation.
No way.
He has become, he's really become a 200-foot player. He's become a much better defensive player than he was even a year ago, to say nothing of what, the past couple seasons where he was really kind of a liability in his own end. So even that's encouraging seeing him. He seems to have emerged as a better defensive player, and Tekken, it's, sort of unlikely, but whatever we are, 8-10 years into his career now, he seems to have emerged as a better offensive player than ever before.
Yeah, it's, I'd say it's weird, except I think I know what, I think I know the cause.
Yeah, no, I think you're serious.
Question two. What do you think has been the most impressive Montreal win thus far?
I hope there's a point in time where we stop using the Bruins as a measuring stick, but I mean, they have been easily the best team in the division, to say nothing of the conference, for getting close to a decade now.
Yeah.
And even though we beat them in the playoffs last year, a win over Boston still feels good and still feels like an accomplishment. And that still felt like a measuring stick game. And, the Habs haven't blown anyone out yet. So it was only a 2-goal game. One of those goals, coming right at the end, but, I still think the Boston win was the most impressive win so far. Playing a Bruins team that was pretty fired up, that was really hoping to get the W there. Montreal came in with 2 points.
Yeah, just for the sake of not picking the same one as you, I'm going to go ahead and say the New York Rangers win. I thought they did everything right in that game.
Yeah.
The passes looked crisp. They looked ready. I thought that was their best played game. I actually think they were a little bit better in that game than the one against the Bruins. The Bruins did manage to score 4 times, and Carey Price maybe wasn't at his best, whereas Carey Price was really good against the Rangers. So I think all players included, including Carey, I think the win over the Rangers was the best one so far.
That might have been their best play game, yeah. We're going through these in unusually rapid order.
We've got nothing to complain about. It's really hard, and it's like, that's nice, that's nice, that's nice. I'm not complaining, but...
It's no coincidence that our longest episodes were during the season where we finished with the third worst record in the league.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's actually, when your team's winning, there's a lot less to talk about. And nobody wants to hear everyone just go, yeah, that's good. How about Patches? That was nice. How about PK? That was nice.
Yeah, pretty much. That's where we're at. It's a weird feeling. Best off-season addition, Manny Malhotra, PA Parenteau, or Syntac?
This is a tough one, I thought. Parenteau's been better than expected. I'll say that much. I've been pretty excited about Parenteau. I know he hasn't put a lot of pucks in the net yet, but I see them coming. But based on just what it seems to have done for Plekanec, the addition of Manny Malhotra, and based on what I've seen on Vaint Katsayash as well, the addition of Malhotra has been very nice. If anyone was worried that the let's go boys, what are we doing out there kind of attitude was gone with Josh Georges, Malhotra seems to have brought that to the team in spades. Longtime vet in the league, knows his role, plays it well, and also the percentage of faceoffs that he wins right now, you could probably give him credit for almost 4 points simply because the Habs are able to pick up the puck and head down to the other end of the ice rather than spinning and defending. And it changes everything when you're winning those faceoffs and simply turning the game around for yourself.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever been a fan base that hasn't enjoyed the Manny Malhotra experience. I'm going to go with Parenteau, who's been everything I was hoping to be, if not even a little bit more. Like you said, he hasn't filled the back of the net, but he's a very reliable top, at least top 9 forward and probably top 6 forward on most teams that you can plug in there. If he manages to stay healthy, you can pretty much pencil him in for at least 20 goals, and he's hit 25-30 before in his career. So, he's considering what we had to give up to get him. He's been, I think, a nice upgrade, a guy who we've said this before, but who's younger and, relatively same cap it as the guy he's replacing. So I thought that was a really nice move by Bergevin, and he hasn't done anything to disappoint. I think he's slotted in really, really nicely there in the top 6.
And he's more physical than I expected.
What's that?
I say he's more physical than I expected. He's a big guy, but there is a physicality to his game because as advertised, he came as, a big guy, but with no physicality. He's not a bruiser out there, but he uses his body pretty decently.
Yeah, he does. He has a reputation as sort of a, like a Michael Ryder goal scorer doesn't bring much else to the table, but I think there's a bit more to his game than that.
I like what I've seen so far. As I say, it was tough, but only between Malhotra and Parenteau. Sikach, what are your thoughts on the Sikach experience so far? We haven't seen much of him, that's for sure.
Haven't seen much of him, haven't seen much from him either. Listen, he's 8 games into his NHL career, not burying, you know, not pouring the dirt on him yet. But at the same time, this was a guy who, you know, he was intriguing. He was relatively well thought of, but we didn't know anything about the guy. And, you know, there's been some guys who come over from the KHL, or I don't think it's a KHL guy who's in the Czech League. You know, there's some guys who've come over and performed admirably, and there's other guys who have plenty of buzz in the offseason, kind of like Sikach did, and then they just sort of fade into oblivion. Listen, the guy has played 6 games. He's 22 years old. There's a long way to go with this. I've seen, well, you know, I want to say I've seen flashes of stuff, but that's, I don't even know if that's the case. He's really kind of been a non-entity. He's been a non-factor, as far as I can tell.
Scored against the Boston Bruins, though.
Yeah, there was that.
So that's pretty good. Now that I haven't seen much from him yet. You're exactly right. We haven't had the chance to see much from him yet. So he could still. I mean, if I'm picking, I got Parenteau scoring more goals than Sikach. That's for sure. And I don't know that I would have said that before the season started.
Yeah, and listen, maybe he finds his sea legs. Maybe we're pleasantly surprised with him. Maybe he chips in 15 or 20 by the end of the season. It's entirely possible. Like we said, he's, you know, the book on him is that he's pretty highly thought of in NHL circles, but yeah. We haven't seen it yet. And that's understandable, but which, I mean, the guy's been a healthy scratch for 2 straight games.
Exactly. No, it's not like I think he's been bad or anything like that, but like we haven't seen him yet.
I would say he's been, yeah.
You'd say he's been bad?
I would say he's been bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really think he's been, you know, for a guy who really brought in to at least generate possession, if not put the puck in the back of the net, I haven't noticed him really at all.
That's fair.
But like I said, he's 22 years old and he's played 6 games.
Yeah, maybe he's just got to take his time to figure out that NHL speed. Question number 4. We're going to do a lot of West Coast-based questions here, because that's where the Habs are headed. Probably have already played if you're listening to this. A few seasons ago, we asked on this podcast if Montreal's 3 young stars, who were at the time Subban, Price, Pacioretty, I like my typo in this, Mike could be more valuable than Edmonton's Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Taylor Hall, and Eberle. At that point, it was still kind of laughable that we might make that comparison. But today I ask, as they prepare to take on the Oilers, have Montreal's big 3 come out on top at this point?
At this point, it's almost laughable to suggest otherwise.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound like too much of a fanboy, but seriously, if you give me the choice between Subban, Carey Price, and Max Pacioretty on the 3 Edmonton guys, I don't have to think very hard about it.
No, and given...
Part of that's because I think you want to build your team, you know, you'd rather have a goalie, a defenseman, and a forward than 3 centers who kind of play the same style of hockey. But honestly, if you ask me to rank those players right now, the 3 Montreal guys are 1, 2, 3.
And it was almost laughable when we brought it up a couple years back. I mean, it seemed ridiculous to talk about comparing Pacioretty, Subban, and Price to those 3. Now, given, you know, this thing still has entire careers to play out, and we'll see what happens. And don't forget, the Edmonton guys are younger. They're a notch below the Montreal guys. So they've still got time to develop, for sure. No doubt about it. But right now, the young stars are more in Montreal than they are in Edmonton. So,
yeah, I mean, I still think Taylor Hall, especially, I think, is a future, you know, 50-goal guy, trophy nominee type guy. I'm still a big Hall fan. You know, I think he definitely turns into a better player than Max Pacioretty at some point in his career. Mm-hmm. Hopkins and Eberle, still nice pieces, obviously, but I don't know if they're the franchise cornerstone building block type guys we thought they were 2 seasons ago. So much as they're, you know, nice, obviously more than role players, but they're nice pieces, but they're not what you'd really hope to get out of the number 1 pick in Eberle, who was whatever it was, 3rd overall.
This one's not in our questions, but since we're talking about this, is there any way the Edmonton Oilers don't take Alex Galchenyuk instead of Yakupov if they could just have a do-over?
Probably not.
I don't think so.
But, I mean, from what we've seen so far through their careers, Galchenyuk's been the more consistent performer. Yakupov was easily the number one pick in that draft, though.
Yeah, people are acting like that's not the case now a little bit. But if Galchenyuk hadn't got hurt, hard to say.
Sure, yeah. I just, Yakupov's not without blame, but I blame the demise of Neil Yakupov more on the Oilers than I do on him.
Let's talk about the Oilers a bit. And we got our, well, actually, we'll get into question number five. It'll allow us to discuss the situation in Edmonton. So question five is, team you'd rather be hired as GM for right now? Would you go with Vancouver, Calgary, or Edmonton? The three teams Montreal's got coming up on the stretch here.
Despite what I just said about the Oilers, it's not a horrible situation to be inherited. Because, I mean, there's still talent on that team. And if they can ever get, well, first, if they can ever get a blue line, and, you know, their goaltending situation's passable. If they can ever sort that out, and sooner or later you kind of think they have to, they're going to have to move some pieces around. But you can't have that many assets and not turn it into a something interesting.
No.
Whereas, you know, Calgary's actually, their future's brighter, if you ask me now, than I thought it would be 6 months ago.
Oh, yeah.
They're actually turning that thing around quicker than I thought it would be. There's some nice pieces in Calgary, too. Vancouver, I don't really know what the hell they're doing. I don't think they know either.
They don't.
Yeah.
They're letting the sun set on that thing. That's what's going to happen now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the right guy can still, you know, we're getting near the tipping point here, but the right guy can still come in and salvage that thing and anything, I think.
Well, you've got the pieces, even if, at this point, I think you have to trade one of those forwards, and you have to get a good return. But you've got pieces to play with if you're going to take over as GM in Edmonton. And I actually think, more than anything, it is the GM that's the problem. Well, not just the GM, it's the whole brain trust, the Oilers. Yeah. It's that old school 1980s oil guys who still seem to think they know how to do it. And for some reason, ownership continues to believe that they know how to do it, even though they failed quite spectacularly for several years in a row now, and might even be, you know, messing up the development of some of these potential stars, Yakupov especially.
Yeah, I mean, we forget, like, Nugent Hopkins looked, you know, he looked like John Tavares Jr. his first year in the league. Yakupov, as much as we shit on him now, Yakupov led all rookies in goals his rookie season. Like,
yeah,
these guys seem to burst onto the scene, and then they stagnate, and yeah, the brain trust there has not done a good job. And, you know, normally I would say that patience is a virtue when it comes to building a team, but I don't blame Oilers fans for running out of patience, because it's clearly not working.
No. And a lot of the wrong things are being done. There just doesn't seem to be, at no point has the ship looked like it started to go in the right direction.
No, I mean, no, quite the opposite, in fact.
It's a mess in Edmonton. They thought they were going to be the Blackhawks 2.0 or the Penguins 2.0 and get that Stanley Cup. It was just a matter of waiting.
Yeah, and it wasn't an insane strategy, but it hasn't been well executed.
No, it just hasn't. It's really the execution. So what would you do if you're GM in Edmonton? Which one do you move?
This upcoming draft is so deep that I don't know if I would make any moves this year. It's almost to the point where I don't even know if, you know, you almost have to give up on this year.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous to say after 8 games, but I would give them another 75 games, see if things start to click. Maybe these guys get hot. You know, the Penguins were last in the league the year they went to the Cup Final, and everything clicked in the second half. There's a 2% chance that maybe that happens. And if it doesn't, you're drafting the top five. Maybe you're drafting Connor McDavid. And then I really do think you ship one of those guys off.
Well, if you get Connor McDavid, you can ship one of those guys off.
Yes, you can. If you don't, even if you get the fifth or sixth pick overall.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they're in a position where, you know, they can draft a highly touted defenseman and wait the 4, 5, 6 years it's going to take for him to become a legitimate number one guy. As you know, it's enticing to think of a future where you're pairing, Hall with someone like Ekblad, but... Yeah. You know, whoever this year's draft version of Ekblad is, but I think that's too much to ask. I think if you get a high pick, you've got to switch one of those guys out.
Yeah, and you do it for a good defenseman. I think you trade the Nuge for a defenseman is what I would do.
Yeah, if you could get, this might be asking too much, you know, but if you could get a Ryan McDonough, Mark Giordano-esque defenseman, Mark Edward Vlasic, maybe if you can get one of those guys for Nugent Hopkins, I think that's the first step.
I think that's too, I don't think you'd get that though. Defensemen are at a higher premium than forwards on most these days.
Yeah.
People really love a strong defenseman.
As they should. I mean, it's a little hard to go too much lower than that if you're getting, you know,
no,
as much struggled. You know, you don't want to get Ryan Nugent Hopkins for number three defenseman.
No, that's true. It's got to be at number two.
You get, you know,
and a good number two.
In Ken Shattenkirk?
I feel like you'd be getting ripped off.
Yeah, it's tough. But that, you know, whatever the piece is, I think that's what they have to do.
What about trading Eberle?
Sorry, what's that?
I say, what about trading Eberle?
Oh, funny you should ask. number six. Beautiful. Would you trade Brendan Gallagher for Jordan Eberle?
Now, here we bring this up because just before we did this, there's a rumor going around on the Twitter that Emlyn for Eberle, which I was, you know, we're not going to bother with that. Of course you do that deal, even though I saw some people who weren't going to do that deal on Twitter. They didn't like that. Yes, obviously you do that. But that's too easy. I got to go with the fan favorite. Would you trade Gallagher for Eberle? Look, I love Brendan Gallagher. I think he's great. I think he brings a lot more to the team than even just the goals and all the little pack energy that he is. But 28 goals for Eberle last year, 65 points. Gallagher's probably not going to... I don't know if he'll ever get you that. I got to make that trade.
I really like Jordan Eberle. $6 million a year for another 5 years, I think. And that's not, you know, that's not insane. That's not going to kill you. And, you know, it's possible with the way, you know, value is being inflated, with the way contracts are being inflated, that Gallagher approaches that number on his next deal. But I think you get more value keeping Brendan Gallagher at, let's say, 4.5 per season than you do with Jordan Eberle at 6 per year.
Yeah, that's true.
It's really tempting because I really do like the guy. And like I said, it's not a massive overpayment. It's probably going to be a deal in 3 years' time. But Eberle's contract's a little rich for my blood, whereas I think you can get a deal on a guy like Gallagher.
What do you think Gallagher's ceiling is? Because I just said there, I don't know that he'll ever score 28.
Yeah, that I don't see him as a guy who has a lot of room for growth. Mm-hmm. You know, he's, you know, perennially overlooked and perennially underrated because of his size, and that sort of allowed him, you know, that allowed the Habs to get him with a late round pick, and he came into the league and shocked people. But I don't think he has that career trajectory where he goes from a 20 goal guy to a 30 goal guy to a, you know, a 35 goal guy. I think who we see is kind of who we're going to get with Brendan Gallagher, which is a really good top six forward who I think his ceiling is probably the 25 goal mark.
Yeah, I would say so, which isn't bad. I got no problem with that.
No, not all those. You know, you need those guys. What's his? I'm just looking up right now. So, yeah, in 2 years in the league, obviously. So he had 15 goals in 44 games his rookie year.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, 19 goals in the full 81 games. So, yeah, I think he's a 25-goal guy. You know, maybe if he has a year with a high shooting percentage, a couple of bounces, and some nice time on the power play, maybe he hits 28, 29. You know, maybe he flirts with 30, but I think he's kind of in the 22 to 27-goal range for, you know, probably 5, 6, 7, 8 straight years.
He was a top scorer with the Vancouver Giants.
Yeah. And at that, there's a time you were down the top scorer on the Montreal Canadiens.
That's true.
A time not too long ago.
That's very true. Question 7. Who's your, excuse me, I got a cough coming on here. Who's your front runner to win the Connor McDavid sweepstakes?
I mean, it's still going to be Buffalo, right?
Yeah, but have you seen the Hurricanes?
Yeah, they're trying their hardest as well. I think, I mean, listen, it's slightly lauderized now at this point, so something weird could happen with the ping pong balls, but I think Buffalo's easily the most talented team in the league. Easily the most talented team in the league.
No doubt. Buffalo, that's your Stanley Cup champs. Good night.
Carolina doesn't look great.
I'm starting to talk myself into Carolina being the worst team in the NHL this season.
Yeah.
But they're about to get stalled back.
The thing I'll say about Buffalo is, as much as they're clearly in tank mode, they brought in players who aren't really tanking-type players.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a coach in Ted Nolan who, you know, he's not a master X's and O's guys, but they're going to bust their asses off for him.
Yeah, I think I watched him beat the Sharks the other day. Which apparently happens like 6 times in a row now. What the hell's going on out there? I don't know. And that was my exact thought, is I think Georges and Gionta are going to play these guys 3 spots too high.
It's possible. I could see them overachieving to, you know, 13th place in the East.
Which would be horrible.
Yeah, that's really the worst case scenario if you're a Sabres fan.
That's probably what will happen.
Maybe they see the writing on the wall and Gionta and Josh just get shipped out at trade deadline, but there's just so little talent on that team that I can't see anyone else surpassing them.
It is a bad hockey team. But they haven't been the worst. Carolina's been the worst.
What's that?
But they haven't played the worst. Carolina's definitely played the worst so far.
Oh, yeah.
They're an embarrassment.
Yeah, Carolina looks, as I think I said this last week, but Carolina reminds me of where Buffalo was about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they're bad now, and they're only going to get worse, because I think the Stalls are on their way out of town. I think Seven's on his way out of town, if anyone will take that contract. Like, they still have a couple of pieces, despite how horrible they are.
As you said on our last podcast, it just starts to make sense that Connor McDavid's going to end up with the stupid Hurricanes.
Yeah, that would really be the worst.
It would be. It just would take all the sizzle out of it. No one wants the Hurricanes. Come on. Buffalo deserves them.
Yeah. Jets aren't too far out of the basement either, are they?
The Jets, they could use another star player to get sick of.
He has certain characteristics then.
That's true.
That their other living boys don't.
you raise a good point there. But they got to make a trade at some point, the Jets.
A trade for Peter Budaj.
A trade for an NHL roster player. They haven't done that since they moved.
I'll never forget where they were when the Peter Budaj trade went down.
Peter Budaj will never forget, that's for sure.
So
the argument could be made you're better off in St. John's than you are Winnipeg, so.
Oh, sure.
Just to offend our Winnipeg demographic. Question.
I've never been to either city, so I will withhold judgment.
Question 8. How much are the Bruins going to miss Big Z?
Well, this happens a lot, and, you know, a star player goes down, and we think, how the hell is this team going to survive without him?
And then they do.
When it's for a relatively short period of time, good teams usually seem to find a way. Maybe you get a bit lucky. Maybe a couple guys perform above their head for a month or two. You know, it's possible that they won't. But that being said, I mean, everything this team does revolves around him.
Oh, yeah.
For 8 years now or whatever it's been. He's really the linchpin of their entire system. And it's a system that's won them a couple President's Trophies and the Stanley Cup and then to another Stanley Cup final. And we've even seen that in the playoffs the last couple of years, that when he's not quite on his game, that team's not quite as dominant. And frankly, there were warning signs even before he went down with an injury that this might not be quite the same Bruins team it's been for the last stretch. Maybe this is wishful thinking. I mean, I think they're in trouble, and then, you know, they still got Craig Sheenberger and Rask and a lot of talent on that team, but they're getting older. There's less depth on that team than there used to be. There's not a whole lot of cap space to make any moves. And, you know, Chara's out a month, 6 weeks. We don't know he's going to be the same guy when he gets back. He's 38 years old, coming off a knee injury. They might be in a bit of trouble.
I think the Bruins rally around this. I actually think this may not go as poorly as some people expect. I mean, look, we see it happen a lot. Stamkos goes down, we all count Tampa Bay out. Marty St. Louis steps up, that whole team steps up. They use it as a rallying point and they play better. If it was the playoffs, that's a different story. But for the 4 to 6 weeks at this point in the season, I don't think this sinks the Bruins. I don't even think they drop off a beat. They might even, well, they got to get a little better, or else we'll all be agreeing that they might be in trouble. But I think they pick it up back to the Bruins hockey we saw last season without Big Z. I'm still very concerned about them. I'll say that much.
Yeah, as am I. I don't know if there's a team out there that, you know, style of play and system revolves around one player the way Boston does around Chara.
No, I guess that's true. You know,
in some ways, he's almost like the biggest Jenga piece in the NHL. But that being said, that roster is still extremely talented.
And they had no trouble. I mean, it was the Maple Leafs, but they didn't seem to have any trouble the other night with that win. Seidenberg's getting some big minutes there.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's some nice young defensemen there who might be able to pick up the slack.
Dougie Hamilton. I just like saying his name.
And then I feel a lot better about that team's franchise, that team's prospects. This Tyler Seguin is still in there.
I know. I think we allude to this every time, but I can't help but think about it every once in a while. I go, Jesus, thank God.
Well, yeah. When your biggest rival trades away a future Hart Trophy winner for no real reason, so it's kind of nice.
Agreed. Move us ahead.
Moving on to number 9. We're early on in the season, but who are you buying stock in, and who are you selling stock?
I talked about the New York Islanders before the season started and said, I think they're a playoff team. I said some things that I want to say were psychic, almost? Almost.
Prophetic?
No, psychic. I'm not a prophet, man. But 6-2 start for the Islanders is a little inflated. So I think that stock has hit its peak. I'd be selling the New York Islanders. I'm not saying they're going to fall off entirely, but fourth in the entire NHL right now, that seems high to me.
Yeah, okay. So we took this question slightly different ways because one of my answers for the teams I'm buying in on is the Islanders.
Fair enough.
I don't think they're winning that division. I don't think they're finishing with the third best record, as you said, in the NHL. I was less bullish on them going into the season, but I understood the argument people were making that they could make the playoffs, and they've been playing really well. And I think all those moves they've made, they're working out really well. So I think that team's a playoff team, which I didn't think before the season started.
I still say that. All right.
I'm buying on them, and I'm buying on the other two quasi-surprise teams out of the Metropolitan. I've said all along that I think New Jersey's a playoff team. And, you know, they're right in the mix there as well. Granted, they're kind of like Montreal. They haven't been blowing teams out. But, again, this is a team that, with a bit of luck in the shootout, their point differential could be – or, sorry, their point total could be a lot better. And Washington I'm buying on.
You're buying on Washington?
Yeah. I thought Trotz was going to be a really weird fit there, but – he's also a really good coach, and I kind of think that's going to work out. At least in the sense that he'll get him back to the playoffs.
So you got a lot of teams in the playoffs here.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, that's three teams right there. We assume Pittsburgh and New York are going to make it.
Yeah.
But I can see those five teams making it and only three coming out of our division.
That's true. I could see that. Yeah, that would make sense to me. I'm buying based on... get it while it's low. St. Louis, 3-3-1, 23rd overall in the NHL. Not a great start, but I got to think the Blues are going to pick up the slack a little. That's just a slow start for them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Only other team I'm selling on, Ottawa's looked pretty frisky.
They have looked frisky.
It looks good, but, and they're, you know, like we said, this is a team that a year ago we all thought was the sort of trendy up-and-coming team in the East, and there is talent there, but there's not a lot of it. I still look at that roster, and I don't see a playoff team there. I could be wrong. I don't see one.
Well, just based on everything we've been saying, I think the Islanders are going to get in. I kind of agree with you on the Caps under Trotz. Somebody's got to go out, and I think Montreal, Tampa Bay, and Boston are getting in. So at that point, I don't think Ottawa's a playoff team.
Yeah. The East, I mean, it's... the disparity between the conferences is still vast, but the East might be a tiny bit better than we thought it was.
I would say so. The East, well, it's not as bad as it was last year. Let's say that.
Yeah, that's a better way of putting it.
I think it's...
And it's early. Some of those teams are going to implode and there'll be injuries and teams will fall off. But, you know, we did just lift off 10, 11, 12 teams that are, you know, semi-legitimate playoff contenders.
I think the East is considerably better. But last season was maybe not all-time worst, but it was historically bad for the East.
Yes, it was.
So, yeah, they improved a little bit overall in the offseason. As you'll see with this next, or maybe you won't, we'll see how this next question goes. But obviously the powerhouses are still in the West, which leads us to where would you put the Habs in your NHL power ranking right now? 7-1. Best start
right
in five
now,
decades.
Yeah. We're at the point of the season where, it's still a really small sample size, but at this point, I'm comfortable ranking teams on how they've played instead of how I think they're going to play.
Yeah.
You know, for the rest of the year, mm-hmm. you know, with the caveat that it's going to shift wildly, but we're 8 games in, so you might as well go based on the track record instead of speculation. I think Anaheim looks like the best team in the league right now, just by virtue of, you know, how many games they won in a much tougher conference. So I've got them at 1, I've got Nashville at 2, and I've got Montreal at 3. And honestly, I might have them 2. I might just be, you know, trying out yourself and name those, you know, slightly less Montreal bias.
I got Anaheim 1, LA 2, Chicago 3, and Montreal 4.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I do not think the Canadiens are a better team than the Blackhawks or the Kings, but I think you could say through 8 games they've played better.
Yeah, certainly. And I was doing a bit of a mix, obviously, of how teams have played so far and expectation. Because Chicago, really, they're fine. But they haven't done anything based on the 8 games that would make you necessarily have to put them at the top up there. 5-2
You're right about LA, though. I put LA above Montreal.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, they're the defending champs, and they're playing. They're 6-1-1 in the West right now. I mean, that's not so bad.
Yeah.
And I'm 7-2-0. It's not so easy to get the wins. We'll see how Montreal does in the West. I mean, this is actually the opposite of the powerhouses of the West. So, but they always seem to struggle when they head out there.
Yeah, it'll be nice. Like you said, it's not really a test, but it mixes things up a little bit. So,
other than the late start times.
Yeah, not a huge fan of those, but
it's because we're old as shit.
Pretty much. Number 11, does Randy Carlyle make it to December with the Leafs?
December? I don't know if he makes it to November. I don't think so. I mean, we said the first smell of trouble and we'd be looking at the door for him. So I gotta think, no way. If I'm putting money on it, no way he makes December.
I mean, I don't know how he made it to October.
Yeah, exactly.
He
might not make it to November.
He might not. Whatever leash he had with that front office, it's not there anymore under the new regime. So I can't see it happening unless you really want to buy into the conspiracy theory that, you know, they're all in on Mike Babcock.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, maybe you just stick with Carlyle and let him play out the string. But even then, you can do the interim thing. You can do the random kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
if they stick with Carlyle, then we know for sure that... the Babcock thing's a done deal, I would think.
That's the only conclusion I could draw. Because, you know, I think there's still a belief in that franchise that they're a playoff team. Which isn't an absurd thing to say again.
No, not at all.
I don't think they're a playoff team under Randy Carlyle. I do not think he's a good head coach. I don't know how he's still the head coach of that team. And I think the Toronto Maple Leafs or the NMLSC are starting to come to that realization that this isn't the guy for the job.
Well,
family covering aside. He's not the guy for the job.
The players in Toronto seem like they've decided he's not the guy for the job. And we yeah, always like to, maybe sometimes we jump too early on the players who quit playing for the coach, but I can draw no other conclusion from what I've seen from Toronto other than the fact that they're just not playing for this guy. They're waiting for the next guy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's, I mean, two completely different coaches, but vaguely reminiscent of what the Habs looked like in the dying days of the Jacques Martin regime.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, they could be a tire fire. Imagine they got Connor McDavid. I think they're too talented to finish last, though.
I think they are, too. We could have fun with, you know, 25 straight years of conspiracy theories if that happens.
But... yeah, we really could. Nah,
the other thing,
they'd finish last thing, and somehow get second in the draft.
That's also true.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, I probably think Mike Babcock's the best coach in the world right now. The second best coach in the world right now is probably sitting by the phone waiting for the phone.
Yeah, definitely.
And I know Dalsma doesn't have the ties to Toronto Babcock.
Yeah, but
you could bring that guy in right now, I would think.
What else is he waiting for? And I mean, he's turned teams around. I think he's a great coach.
I think he's a fantastic coach. And, you know, maybe he doesn't want to take that role on. And that's kind of understandable. But they can offer him, you know, heaven and earth. And if I'm Toronto, I think I'm making a run at Dan Bylsma.
I would, too. Because if you hear the news tomorrow that they fired Carlisle and Bylsma is coming in, I'm buying on them suddenly. I'm convinced that they're potentially a playoff team. Because we said this last week. The tools are sort of there in Toronto. You've got some good stuff. If it's well coached and functional for a few minutes, that's a playoff team. But it's never functional.
No, but if you have a guy who can use those pieces the right way, it's one of the eight best teams in the East, I think.
I would think so. Especially if Bernier gives you good goaltending, which he's not providing right now. They need that to turn around. That's not helping them at all. But I think Bernier's a pretty good goalie. I think he will turn around.
Yeah, not even I think. That is one of the best eight teams in the East if they're well coached.
But they're just such a shit show. Speaking of shit show, voted. Toronto votes. The end of the Ford era is on it's into its final hours here. Which has been pretty much my entire Toronto experience. I think Ford was voted in as mayor 2 weeks into moving into this city. Real bullshit.
You gonna miss it? Because the rest of us are.
Yeah, no, I know everyone else is gonna miss it. I'm not gonna miss it. Not one bit. Not at all. Unless Dougie with an upset tonight. Who knows? That's why I'm not even gonna watch Habs. I'm just gonna be glued to my Toronto mayoral election. I'm all about the school districts. Who are we kidding?
I'll call those at 4 in the morning.
Actually, they're all fine. It's electronic voting here. We'll have the answer in no time.
Ooh, what's the
answer? More you know. Number 12. We did fly through these today. It's okay. You can hear my dinner sizzling. The best Hab to go trick-or-treating with. Halloween theme.
Obvious answer for me, Brendan Gallagher.
Yeah.
Because he looks like he legitimately looks like someone who could go trick-or-treating.
Oh, yeah. Did you see the picture of him in Ninja Turtle?
Like, I did, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want to be that annoying, like, 17-year-old kid with half a mustache who's still trying to get some candy.
No.
But you could bring Brendan Gallagher with you and possibly, you know, there's enough makeup on there. You can convince someone that that's your 11-year-old brother.
I think with the...
He's probably bigger than I am. But,
yeah. No, he's not. He's 5'7". I mean, he's definitely bigger. Man. He could definitely bench more than you. Do you even lift, bro?
I could kick his ass.
You could kick his ass. There's no doubt about that. I just think in the Ninja Turtle costume, I think he would have passed for 11 years old. I don't even think you need to do any work besides stick a costume on him.
Yeah, exactly.
I got Gallagher as well.
Gallagher, so I don't get the awkward stares.
Yeah, and I know...
Just leave my son alone.
just my son, leave me alone. I know a lot of people would want to hang out with Subban, but did you see his costume? You can't be trick-or-treating with that. A, gets all the attention. You don't want that. You're beside him in your shitty costume that's, what are you? I don't know, I'm something under a snowsuit over here. Guy paid $2 million for his sweet Thriller costume.
Yeah, you don't want to trick or treat with someone who's infinitely more charismatic than you.
No, exactly.
You're not getting entertained that way.
I like that we think we're more charismatic than Brendan Gallagher.
No, I just think I look older.
Yeah, well, that's even I look older than Brendan Gallagher. But I'm also bringing Presti with me. Because, you know, you run into some bullies, you want Presti there, I feel.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you can just turn people into giving you candy, there's that option.
That's very true. And you bring the ladies around when you're doing the candy trading, they'll come over to talk to Brendan.
You sure would.
Then you can awkwardly shuffle behind them. Smooth move, Zach. So that's the 12-pack. No complaining. It's no fun when we're not complaining. Well, at least we got a Marchand of the Week to get into. We'll do a little bit of bitching. I guess we could first take a look at what's coming up on the schedule ahead, if I can get it out in time before my phone dies. Real professional operation we got going over here. Real professional. I'll even get the dates right this time. You've probably heard this game, watched this game by the time you're listening to this podcast. 9:30 on Monday night, Edmonton. Follow that up with a 9 o'clock start in Calgary Tuesday, and then 10 o'clock start on Thursday, the Vancouver Canucks, and then we'll hopefully podcast before the next one, so we'll cover the Western road trip ahead. Quick thoughts on that. You got to come back with 4 or 6 points.
Yeah, I mean, yes, in theory. You know, given that the Habs have probably stolen a couple, that their record's probably a little better than the actual level of play. I'm a little worried that the shoe's about to drop.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily in the next 3 games, but, you know, at some point the shoe's going to drop a little bit. So if the team doesn't come away with 4, I think that's sort of a symptom of that. You know, maybe there's a little bit of regression coming into play, but I think they're the better team in all of those games. So you would like to see them, you know, win the majority of them.
Yeah.
If not sweep them outright.
I mean, I would... Like you say, they're the better team, I think, in all 3 of those games. But I also don't see them going to. I don't really see them going to 10-1.
No, that's a lot to ask. Like, you know, 3 straight wins on the road,
on the West Coast. Yeah,
that's asking a lot. Even if there wasn't the regression factor coming into play, even if this team was firing on all cylinders, that's really hard to do.
And Tokarski's going to get a start in there.
Yeah.
He was the first star in the other game that he started, but he's still a newbie goalie, and he's not Carey Price. I'd like to see him come away with 4. Even 3, you'll be okay with. 4 should be what they're getting to, but that does lead us directly into the bold fucking prediction. And just to go with mine, to be bold here, the Habs are finishing the... Western Canadian road trip and bring him back a 10-1 record.
Oh,
yeah,
very nice.
That's right.
Nice thing about that is, so they got the 3, then they got Calgary again, their first game back.
Yeah. 11-1? Oh my God, 11-1, everybody.
It could be 11-1. If they're 11-1 and about to host the Blackhawks.
Oh shit, that'd be awesome.
That becomes the biggest regular season, you know, at least the biggest November regular season game in a long, long, long time.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, let's face it, it's not going to happen, but, you know, if it did, that'd be amazing. That's why it's a bold prediction. What's your BFP?
My BFP of the week, there's been a rash of...
Oh, you got a rash?
On my, yeah, sort of on my leg, and I predict it's going to spread without medical attention. No.
Sorry.
There has been a rash of Edmonton Oilers sweaters being thrown onto the ice recently in the capital of Alberta, as the fans are somewhat understandably starting to voice their displeasure with this 10-year rebuilding effort. I think Montreal goes in there. I think they score a couple of quick ones, and I think we see a couple sweaters on the ice.
All right, I'll take that.
Bold enough? It's borderline.
Toronto's doing it. They're already in sweater throwing mode.
Yeah, there's 2 cities that are doing it right now. It's Edmonton and Toronto. Right? Buffalo, at least the fans know what the deal is.
Oh, Buffalo, they can't afford to throw away jerseys. So mean to Buffalo. So mean.
Yeah, I said I'd never been to St. John's or Winnipeg, so I can judge them.
You've been to Buffalo.
I've been to Buffalo, and I'm not going to correct you.
That's diplomatic of you. All right, and now your Marchand of the Week.
Again, hard to find things to complain about when your team's kind of kicking ass. So I went outside of Habsden because I don't really have anything to gripe about. But what did rub me the wrong way was the Anaheim Ducks. I said I think they're the best team in the NHL, and they probably are, but they didn't equip themselves all that well last night against the Sharks.
No, they did not.
No, they did not. Corey Perry, one of the underrated dirty guys in the NHL. Right?
Oh, definitely. And, like, pretty, like, one of the dirtier players in the NHL. But yeah, because he can score a ton of goals, he gets a, we forget about it. If he scored, like, 15, we'd all be talking about how dirty he is all the time.
Yeah. You know, Getzlaff, to me, is a tough player.
Oh, yeah.
And a physical player. And he, you know, maybe he steps over the line on occasion. But, you know, I don't consider him a dirty player. Kessler verges into dirty player territory on occasion. But Perry's, like, legitimately a dirty. Like you said, he's, you know, if he's only scoring 10 a year, we're talking about him like he's Rafi Toivonen.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, I know with the Ducks, I thought that wasn't, that was kind of one of the more blatant examples of goonery that I've seen near the goings of the NHL season.
That's fair. That's a, it's a decent Marchand. For mine, I'm...
not a whole lot to get pissed about.
No, exactly. There's nothing to do with the Habs. I mean, you're an asshole if you're nitpicking right now. So, my Marchand of the Week, it's not even of the week, it's like from 10 days ago, but we took a little while to do a podcast. But anytime you beat the Bruins and Milan Lucic does the old jerk off to the fans, hey, it's going to be him. He's going to walk away with it, stealing it from his own teammate, Brad Marchand, the namesake of the damn thing. But we talked about this, not on the podcast, how... I've always disliked Lucic more than Marchand, and you're coming over now to my side in this dirty hate cesspool.
It goes back and forth, okay. And I'm sure Marchand is going to do something in a week that'll drive you equally nuts. But yeah, I mean, Lucic is a whole, like, Marchand at least kind of is maybe playing a character a little bit.
Yeah, Lucic is a monster.
Lucic is just kind of an asshole.
Oh, he's gonna really hurt Hab at some point this season. That's not even a bold prediction.
Oh, yeah,
that's
absolutely
a fact. That's happening this season. And look, and obviously we're biased and it hasn't even started. It hasn't happened yet, but it, to me, when it's so obvious that some guy is going to look to hurt the opposition, like, I don't see how we can all know that that's coming, and when it happens, Lucic will only get a 3-game suspension. Like, that's just the definition of goonery, and obviously he's going to target a Hab. He said as much. He's already seems to be trying for it. But when it happens, he's only going to get 3 games.
I hope that's not the case. I get the feeling the NHL is just waiting to bring the hammer down on that guy.
I like that I'm already upset about a penalty and a dirty play that has not happened yet.
Yeah, no, I know. Part of me almost thinks that the Bruins are waiting for someone to bring the hammer down on that guy, because I think even in that locker room and in that franchise that, you know, values those type of things as much as they do, I think the axe is starting to wear a little thin.
Yeah, and he and Marchand have really, they've hurt the Bruins more against the Habs than they've helped them at any point recently.
Yep.
Their distaste for the Habs is making them, they're both decent players. I mean, Lucic is a good player. Marchand does when he's doing his thing, it's effective. But they've both been rendered fairly ineffective by the fact that they forgot what the hell they're actually playing for when they play the Habs.
Yep.
And that's fine by me. They can keep doing that. It's nice to have the upper hand in that relationship. Because that's, I think the Senators, on the other hand, are in Montreal's head still.
Yeah, maybe. I think the comeback might have gotten rid of that, but
I don't know. What I saw in the preseason, I guess what I'm saying is the Canadiens don't play their hockey necessarily when they play the Senators. Now, that was preseason. It may have just been a bunch of guys trying to prove themselves to get on the roster. But I still think the Habs feel like they got an axe to grind with the Senators rather than just going out and beating them at hockey, which they can do, obviously.
Yeah.
There. I love getting pissed off about things that have yet to happen. Like, I don't have enough that pisses me off. I need to pick up things from the future. All right, and I remember at one point last season, we said we're going to stop doing the three stars because it was always going to be the same three guys, and we switched it to highlight of the week. But I'll give you a little, I'll give you a choice. Which one do you want to do?
Let's do three stars because it's actually, I mixed it up a little bit this week.
All right. Let's hear them.
Number three on the list, he is an occasional whipping boy of ours in a certain segments of Habs fandom, but David Dane has been pretty good this year.
He really has. He's been a good player this year.
He's been good. I thought he's been, you know, he's being creative with the puck. He's finding guys in space. He's
still doesn't shoot.
You know, no, still doesn't shoot. And we'll see what the numbers say. And you know, I don't know what type of player he is without Patch Ready on the wing. But that being said, I've been impressed by him.
No, he's playing really well, I would say.
He's been at his best where he's doing that thing where he's finding the creases in the defense. And he's, you know, he's generating play. And he's, yep. He's getting stuff going in the other direction. And he's finding, you know, getting the puck on guys' sticks. And I thought he's been really good. So a guy who's almost gone from being, you know, really underrated to pretty overrated, and he's almost underrated again in a sense for all the grief that he gets. Like, he's probably not worth the contract. He's not the possession driver you'd like him to be, but he's still a nice player.
Yeah, and when he's playing like this, he's a nice player. He's a good player.
Yeah, when he's playing
and he's effective. He's a playmaker.
Yeah. Yeah. Number two, his line mate, Max Pacioretty, who, you know, A, looks like he's on pace for another 35 to 40 goal season, and B, like you said earlier, is turning into a much more all-around player than I ever thought he'd be.
Mm-hmm.
He had a nice week, and number one, guy who might end up being our best forward by the end of the season.
It's possible.
Man, Galchenyuk's looking good.
Yep.
And it's at the point where, you know, we've been beating the drum for 2 years now where we would see flashes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of it.
Yeah.
And that was, I would say that was more Michel Therrien's fault than his fault. And surprise, surprise, now that he's getting some playing time, like, he looks, it's not flashes anymore. Like, it's.
He's a good player.
Shifts and periods and games. Like, he's a legitimate top six forward now.
I forget who it was against now. Maybe Detroit. He scored a goal. That he just forced his way through. He just used his size and his hands to score a goal that nobody else on the Canadiens for a long time has been able to score. If they were that kind of locked up and then given that kind, it's been a while since they simply had a player. Maybe Kovalev was probably the last guy who could score a goal like that. All the, you know, as we say, it's a drum we've been beating for a while now. We kept saying, you can see it if he could just finish, if he could just do this. Well, this season, he's finding the way to finish those plays. It's coming around for him, and his confidence seems to be growing just like gangbusters. He's figuring the game out almost with every game. You can see it happening. And actually, another guy who's kind of doing that is Pacioretty, who I think every game is almost playing a little bit better on the other side of the puck, not just the 39 goal scorer anymore.
Yeah.
Good stars. I went with the highlight of the week because I'm not going to forget it for quite a while. It has to be that PK Subban goal against Colorado. I mean, that was...
that was great.
That was just absolutely amazing. And, you know, he got the defenseman to blow a tire and then just had all the time in the world and proved that, as I say time and time again, and I will keep saying it until it starts happening with some regularity, PK Subban should be in the shootout most of the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's ridiculous that he's not. But the Habs haven't been bad at that. Parenteau's good. Dalinov's good. Galchenyuk's coming in on his own. They have some guys who, it used to be, you know, you'd send them down there and they all try the Plek move of backhand or something. But there's actually some guys who are bringing some finesse to the shootout this season.
Yeah. There are a few feelings as a hockey, like when PK Subban has the puck on his stick and he's got some room to work with and he's got a head full of steam and you can just see that he's trying to do something. There aren't many feelings like that as a sportsman.
I mean, I think back to the goal he scored in the playoffs against Boston. It's electric when Subban's going down there like that.
Yeah, it really is.
All right. There's a lot of banging around, so I'm going to have that happening. You got anything else you wanted to get off your chest before we watch Edmonton, Montreal?
No, I'm going to go have some dinner and settle in time for the midnight puck drop.
It sucks to be old. It's like 9 o'clock it's starting.
Yeah, I know.
God.
Concussion wise.
I doubt it. This was the last podcast. Died of staying up too late at too old of an age. Thanks for listening. We got to mention as we get out of here, we didn't mention it off the top, rabbithabs.com. Check it out for all your Montreal Canadiens related needs in French, in English. You got tons of good content down there. Our very own David Green, comedian who also once in a while contributes on the Montreal Bias. He did a little bit of write-up over there on Rabbit Habs, all sorts of variety of stuff. And I want to give a quick shout-out as well to the other podcast they host on Rabbit Habs, Pucks on Net. It's I'm not just mentioning them because we happen to be supported by the same website. I've got to say, I've been listening to Pucks on Net, and if you're looking for more hockey podcasts that are well worth a listen, they don't like fancy stats. I get very upset about that. And I don't necessarily agree with their rebuild on Edmonton ideas. But it's a good podcast to listen to. Highly suggest if you're looking for another hockey one to give that a listen. On that note, we get out of here. Follow me on Twitter at Zach Vanoss. He's at The O'Neill Factor. And the website's at The Montreal Bias. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll see you next time.